You're listening to episode 224 of Women Worldwide. Do you have a lifelong dream that you think about and it's beyond any goal you've ever imagined, but there's something holding you back or you just don't know the steps to get there? I've got a guest that can help you, so stay tuned to learn more. Hi, I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. I've spent an entire career helping women to share stories, nurture relationships, grow their brands, but most of all, to find their voices so they can make a difference. Do you feel stuck? Do you want to power up your own voice? Women Worldwide features the stories of passionate women who have navigated big career challenges and some of the toughest changes. These professionals offer deep insights and advice to inspire you and to help you uncover what's holding you back. Let Women Worldwide ignite your passion so you can excel in life. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Women Worldwide. Whether you are tuning in on iTunes or Google Play, or now you're watching us on YouTube, and yes, you can subscribe to our channel, we just want to say thank you. Thank you for helping the Women Worldwide Network grow. And we're hearing from you. We're learning that you love the amazing guests that we bring on the show every single week because they are giving you ideas and insights. They're helping to fuel your passion and to power up your own voice. And that's our goal. Okay, so let's dive into today's show and topic. The topic is achieving lifelong dreams. So all of us have these goals, and then we have stretch goals, and then we have these lifelong dreams that we can see them, but we just don't know how to get there. So that's where my special guest comes in today. Her name is Karen Brown, and she has achieved her lifelong dream of competing in the Ironman World Championships. She did this as a recreational athlete at the age of 46, no less. I truly admire this. And then she parlayed the experience and model into leadership coaching. And she is working with leaders today to help them elevate their performance, impact, velocity, and doing it with ease. And it's no surprise that she is the CEO. Her company is Velocity Leadership Consulting, and she's using behavioral neuroscience techniques to help professionals. So enough of what I have to say about Karen. Karen, you're going to share your journey. It's great to have you on my show. Welcome.
Thank you. I am so thrilled to be here.
Well, I just, whenever I think of achieving lifelong dreams, ever since we spoke, I think of you, because you really do have an amazing story. And maybe we can start with that lifelong dream and how you actually got to competing in Ironman World Championships.
Yes, it's a good story, I must say, and I'm thrilled to share it. So for roughly 20 years, I was climbing the corporate ladder as a leader and, you know, happy. I had the outward trappings of success. I had the outward signs, you know, nice car, nice house, nice vacations. I made decent money. And yet I had this nagging feeling deep inside that there was a lot more that I was missing, you know, things that I wasn't seeing. And what I was feeling was a lack of purpose. You know, what is this really all about? What am I doing this for? What am I here on the earth to accomplish, right? And I would always come into touch or come into feeling those emotions when I watched the Ironman World Championships on TV. Now, this started for me when I was 14 years young. And because it was sort of like, first of all, it was this thing that I didn't know anything about. I didn't know what an Ironman was. I didn't know what a triathlon was. I was basically a recreational runner. And then I grew into loving mountain biking and things like that. But, you know, total recreational athlete, total amateur. Active, you could say. But that's really the extent of it. And While I was watching the drama of that year unfold, which it was 1982, for anybody who wants to check the archives, I can't even believe we actually have video from this time, right? It's like the Stone Age now.
I remember the 80s.
Yeah.
Good times.
Yeah. It was a very dramatic year, especially for women, because Julie Moss, who was a college student at the time, she was leading the race the entire day for the women. And then because she didn't fuel properly, she lost the lead at the very end. And it's a miracle that she actually finished. So I'm watching this thing and it's like a train wreck that you can't look away from, but you're just, you know, I was just terrified the whole time, horrified. Like, what the hell is this? And why am I compelled to watch this? Well, what I later realized is I was so compelled because I was able to tap into that feeling of my purpose, my capability, that really the thing that resounded in my head was, what if I have inside me what it takes to do something like that? And I'm not tapping into it. I'm just playing this small, safe life. And I still get choked up when I think about that and I reflect on those thoughts, because I thought of how many years I wasted not seeing that, not coming into contact, not discovering my potential, first of all, and my purpose on this earth, because I think I could have done so much more. Now, you know, let's think happier thoughts now. Everything happens for a reason. And I truly believe that I was meant to do the Ironman World Championships because it was the toughest thing that I could fathom at the time. And it really forced me to stretch and expand my comfort zone. It became my personal growth and development vehicle of choice. And that's really, you know, coming full circle back to your initial question, I think that's really the importance of having lifelong goals or dreams. Because the other thing that I realized along the way, once I finally, after 25 plus years of holding myself back from even pursuing the Ironman, which I can go through in a minute why I did that and how that helps listeners now.
Yes.
But what I later learned is that I thought that they were two separate things, right? Like my professional performance and capabilities and my personal goals and dreams. I thought they were completely separate. And what I found through this journey to Ironman and even beyond is that they are inextricably linked, and that I wasn't going to be able to perform at elevated levels, which I felt like I had the capability to do, but I couldn't access it for some reason. That was the doorway to being able to do that was through a lifelong dream. And once I stepped into that, the pursuit of it, I was able to elevate. And I'm going to be real with your listeners. It was hard work. It kicked my ass.
Yeah.
And it continually did that. I mean, there were lots of tears. There were lots of times that I was tempted to give up because it was so hard. It was so challenging. And I was really transforming in a lot of different ways. So I would offer that to your listeners that, you know, everybody that I've ever met, ever run across in anything I've done, speeches, podcasts like this, coaching, etc., some big audiences, all of us have a lifelong dream. Whether we've admitted it to ourselves or anyone else is another story. But we all have a lifelong dream. And because it's usually so big, so audacious, so scary, which certainly mine was the case, we tend to back away. And there's scientific reasons for that, which we can transform and conquer, but we tend to back away. And yet, that is the exact thing that will help us find our purpose, progress the most, elevate, and it leads to true happiness and fulfillment.
Are we, so two follow-up questions. one, backing away, limiting ourselves? Is it because we're scared? And number two, do you find that, and I don't know if this is a fair question or not, but when you work with leaders, is this something that is more with women? Is it more with men? Is it with everybody?
Excellent questions. Gosh, this is why I'm on your show.
Oh, thank you.
And I'm sure this is why everyone listens.
Thank you.
All right. So question number one, limiting, which is, you know, limiting ourselves, backing away because we're scared. Yes, we're scared. It's a thing called fear. However, there's something that happens in our unconscious mind that makes it just a behavioral pattern. And because it's a behavioral pattern, kind of like a habit, the good news is we can change it like a habit. Okay, so here's what happens. It's something called limiting beliefs, and it happens in the split second. Honestly, faster than we can even consciously recognize what is going on, the pattern repeats itself. So if you think about when we were cave people running around, when we had to do whatever it took to survive another day, right? We had to catch our own food. We had to run our own food down. We had to learn how to make fire. I mean, all of these things, right? And to do that, just survival took everything in us every single day, right? So our unconscious mind developed a tenacity for finding and repeating patterns over and over. And it started with when facing something new, different, or perceived to be dangerous, the default is always, nope, not going to do that. Because it's a different pattern, right? It's something we've never done before. So when I was looking at the Ironman World Championships, my pattern, my limiting belief was, well, the athletes that compete there are elite. They are high level. They are pros. And I'm down here. I'm this little nobody, nothing special, nothing remarkable about me. I'm just this girl with a gargantuan dream, right? So there's this big gap between us, which is comparison bias, by the way. And how can I possibly compete? And that happened that fast. Literally, our unconscious mind processes slightly slower than the speed of light. Again, we are not consciously aware that this is even happening. All of a sudden, we just go, yeah, okay. And we kind of move on. And if we reflect back on it enough, then we think, oh, well, those were just facts, right? The four-letter F word. Different F word.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't think about that.
Yeah. But the truth is they weren't fact. They were inside our own head. So we thought they were fact. I mean, it was very easy for me to say, oh, well, I'm not a pro athlete. I've never done a triathlon. I've never ridden a road bike and I've never run a marathon. Those are facts.
So therefore, right? I'm not.
But my unconscious mind would extrapolate that to go, well, if you haven't done that, then you can't possibly compete with these elite level pro athletes from all over the world in the toughest human endeavor on the planet. What makes you think you can? And yes, to answer your second question, this is more pervasive in women than men. And I will stretch it a little bit though to say that women's typical limiting belief is some version of, I'm not enough. I'm not talented, skilled. I don't have enough experience in that already. In some way, we think we're not enough. We don't have the capability. Now, men's is slightly different. It's that they feel like they have to figure out and do everything for themselves. They cannot ask for help. Yeah. So I see that pervasively with both sets of leaders. And, you know, it's in the workplace where those patterns come out the most, right? These personal patterns actually come out where we spend the most time.
Right. Because you can't separate the two. Like you said, who you are is who you are personally as well as in the workplace.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's all our identity. Right? It's who we think we are.
One identity. So, Karen, I'm feeling that the limiting belief starts with the conscious mind. The things that we say and what we see externally that we feed ourselves that get into the subconscious. And that's where these patterns, and it's almost like a part of this automatic thing that just happens where you're stating this belief and it plays out in your world where you could, you have the power to change that, which you did.
Absolutely right. Yes, you're absolutely right, Deirdre. Yes, it starts with that conscious thought of I want to do X, right? I wanted to do the Ironman World Championships. And then while you're in that conscious thought, thinking things like, well, can I do that? What would that be like? Those are actually gateways into your unconscious mind.
Amazing.
Yeah. So then your unconscious mind engages, you know, when you ask yourself questions like that, what would that be like? What would it feel like to do that? What's involved with that? And it also includes that comparison bias that I mentioned earlier. So we compare ourselves to other people who are doing that. I compared myself to Julie Moss, or other situations like what we want to achieve and go, oh, wait a minute. Gosh, there's this big chasm between what I'm doing now and what I want to do. Yikes. And then it's that emotional hook that is a doorway into the unconscious. Then our unconscious mind takes over and goes, oh, wait. No. That's going to put us at risk. That's something we've never done. No, we better not do that.
So is that comparison bias? Is that just human nature? Although we're always told that, you know, competition is good. Competition can be healthy. So how do we make that less about the comparison bias and the healthy competition that we want to engage in for ourselves to be
that? Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, know that your unconscious mind that sets up all these patterns is nothing more than the most simplistic yet powerful machine. So it's almost like your computer. It'll do whatever you tell it. If you tell it you can't do something, it's going to go, yeah, Deirdre can't do that. We're not going to do that. We're afraid of that. No. And if you say, I am going to do that, like one of the ways that I conquered this was every time this thought came up for me, this limiting belief, I would stop dead in my tracks, no matter where I was, no matter what I was doing. And I would say out loud, I will compete in the Ironman World Championships, because your unconscious mind also hears that, right? So it'll believe and carry out anything that you tell it that it can or cannot do, right?
This is fascinating. So you actually have a book that is called Limiting Beliefs?
Unlimiting
Beliefs. Mm-hmm. And there are 7 techniques in the book, if mm-hmm. I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. So would you be able to, I know you can't share all 7, although I'd love to extend this episode because we could talk for hours, but what stands out for the reader as what is maybe one of the most important or useful or first step as far as the unlimiting beliefs?
Okay. So first of all, just to be totally clear, the name of the book is Unlimiting Your Beliefs. Because honestly, this is what holds everyone back. I've been able to do a lot of research, and this is the number one thing that I found that holds everyone back, regardless of gender, regardless of situation, regardless of role or level, holds all of us back because we're all human beings with unconscious minds. Okay. Then I would say conquering limiting beliefs is a 3-step technique. And at the end, we'll share, information on how your listeners can get that those 3
that's
steps.
Great. That's great.
Okay. So that's the most important thing. I would say that's number one. Number two then is related, which is tapping into the dream, mm-hmm. right? You've got to tap into this big, hairy, gargantuan dream that, you know, quite frankly, people are going to laugh at. There were a ton of people that laughed at me, you know, when I said, I'm going to compete in the Ironman World Championships. My own husband at the time said, and this is a story in the book,
that's an important
I'll have to pick it up
question.
To read it. He said, you don't have what it takes. You will never get there.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Okay. So that's another whole chapter, but tapping into that dream. And there's a specific way to do it through those emotional hooks that I mentioned that open those doors to your unconscious mind so you can harness the power of it. Okay. Right. Because your unconscious mind is infinitely more power than your conscious mind. Okay. And then I would say there's two other really quick ones that I think are so topical in our society. Number one is do whatever it takes. Because there are always things that we discover after we embark upon a lifelong dream. Things that maybe if we knew that we were going to have to do them before we set off on the journey, we might not have done it. But now you've made a decision and you got to do whatever it takes. Otherwise, you will not get there, right? Right. So it's doing whatever it takes. And during that time, it's having no discipline. And no discipline. And this is a purposeful play on words. It's the ability and I guess the decision that you make to say no to the distractions, the things that are going to get you off track from achieving that lifelong dream. Because there are plenty of them. And it really is. And this is probably the first thing we also work on with clients in leadership. There's so many things vying for your time and trying to distract you and get you off track that once you really get those under control, you identify them, you get them under control, and you're able to say no, because we are in a society of not saying no, especially in a leadership role. We're used to saying yes, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. So you say yes to everything and then you're ineffective at everything.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, so those is are powerful.
What's up for?
Well, though, Karen, my chills have chills. Okay. Do people tell you that when they talk to you? The light bulbs are popping in my mind. So I'm sure listeners, all of you out there, feel the same way. Karen, we're going to dive back into the discussion once again, but I'm going to ask you to hold your thoughts because we are going to shift our focus to our sponsor of today's episode, and that's Routledge Publishing. I don't know if you know Routledge, but they are one of the world's leading publishers of academic books and journals. And they're also, they just so happen to be the publisher of my new book. It's Answers to Modern Communicators. Thank you. A Guide to Effective Business Communication. And Karen, this book is a Q&A book. So I've answered over 150 questions for modern communicators. And I just thought it would be really fun if you answered one of those questions. So I handpicked a question for you.
All right.
Let's get it. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. So your question is question number 81. Why is feedback a gift?
Ah, what a great question. Okay. So first of all, I replace the word feedback with perspective. Also, this small little insignificant company called Microsoft did the same thing. They did the same thing because what they discovered is that feedback, because of how our brains work as human beings, feedback is always tainted with our own personal filters, values, and essentially then what causes that feedback to merely be our perspective about what's going on, right? It's like those ink blot paintings, right? It starts with a G. I can't remember the name. But everybody knows what I'm talking about, right? It's when, you know, three people look at the same exact thing and they see three different things.
Rorschach.
Yeah, Rorschach.
Rorschach. Not a G, it was a V.
Yeah, exactly what I said. Starts with a V. Yeah, well, that is perspective, right? So first of all, if you've got a feedback system in your company, change the title of it to perspective. That's actually an accurate description of it, okay? Because it's only another person's perspective of you, your behavior, your performance, etc., right? Now, the reason it's a gift is because it is exactly that. It is someone else's perspective on the same thing, right? So, and it's only through other people's perspective, and I should say it's the best way for us to see things in a different way, to look at it from the opposite side of it, maybe inside out. And in that way, it is a gift because then we get to see something that we didn't see before. That causes us to be able to grow and change. And it's in that growth and change that honestly, we usually discover the best stuff.
And that's why we need more women at the boardroom table or anywhere because of their perspectives. It's diverse and to include them.
Yes.
That's a really great point.
Absolutely. And let me tag on to what you just said with that. You know, this other interesting behavioral pattern that I've noticed is in the boardroom, a setting like that, right, where it's all high-level leaders, women will typically hold their thoughts back until they're positive that they have completely thought through from beginning to end what they're going to say.
Right.
Whereas men don't do that. They'll just talk on the fly. Doesn't matter whether it's a fully baked concept or not. They'll just, you know, start talking, come right out with it. And even if at the end they feel like, oh, I don't think that was, the best idea, they won't say that. They'll just come out with it and then own it. And hey, you know, doesn't really matter what happens with it. So you're right. We need women and we need them to show up and just open your mouth and start sharing your ideas and your concepts, whether or not you think that they are fully baked or they're the best answer. Who cares?
Right.
Contribute.
Stream of consciousness, almost.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I do want to go back to something you asked me earlier, which I did not fully cover, which is comparison bias.
Oh, yes. And you know what? Let's just thank Rutledge. Yes. Thank you, Rutledge, for sponsoring the show today. But Karen, let's dive back in. Comparison bias, please define.
Yes. So remember how I said earlier, your unconscious mind is the most simplistic, powerful machine.
Yes.
It is also a judging mechanism. And I don't mean judging in a bad way, like, oh, I'm judging this person as less than I am. I don't mean that. What I mean is our unconscious mind had to immediately size up situations when we were cave people running around as to whether they were friend, food, or foe, and get us to take immediate action that would, again, keep us alive another day. So it's ingrained. It's an inherent behavioral pattern within us, right? That's something we're not going to eradicate. Like, we can eradicate conquering beliefs by changing that pattern, but this is part of our DNA, right? We will never change it. But what we can do is know that that is how our operating system works. And once we know that, we can be aware of it. And as we are judging things and going, oh, wait a minute, I'm comparing myself to her, or I'm comparing my thoughts to the thought that somebody else at the boardroom table just shared, and I think my thoughts are lesser or inadequate or whatever we assign to them, we're really only in competition with ourselves. We're not in competition with anyone else. No. And, sometimes when I do speeches, folks will run up to me after and they'll say, hey, what was your time at the Ironman? And I'll tell them, and they'll say, well, how does that rank? And I'll say, I truly don't know, nor do I care. This was all about me competing against me and bringing out my best and bringing out my potential and learning my purpose so that I could share that with the world and, you know, do that on a daily basis. This didn't have anything to do with me competing against the other 1,999 athletes that were in Kona that day.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah. Nor is it a competition at work. I mean, we're all on the same team. We're looking to achieve something great. We're also looking to do that in our lives. So it's really just that inner competition, right? And once you know yourself better and you know how your unconscious mind works, how these behavioral patterns are formed, it's so much easier to change them to something that serves you better.
I wish more people would look on the inside. I think they look externally for that gratification, for the competition to be better. You hear so much about it in the workplace where it's so cutthroat, you're dealing with the politics. Do you feel that the neuroscience and these behavioral techniques, is this something that's new to executives in the corporation? Is this a hard sell? Do people understand this?
Yes and no. It is somewhat new. However, there's in probably the last 5 years, especially, there's been more and more information, data, examples out there. I mean, this is some of the work that Brené Brown is doing.
Yes, I just got her book.
Oh, yeah. Yes. I've read all three of them. They are incredible. Yeah. However, this has been around for hundreds of years. This goes back to folks like Richard Bandler and Albert Einstein and Carl Jung and Fritz Perls. And yeah, it goes back a long way, hundreds of years. And I mean, this is what Tony Robbins and his predecessors, started to bring forward. You know, it's built on the same kind of premise, only he, incorporates a slightly different model with it. But it is really all about human behavior. And you're right. Human beings, especially our U.S. culture, mm-hmm. have really gotten into a place of the quick fix, the immediate answer. You know, I want a pill to fix that. You know, if you look at the nutrition and health industry, gosh, that's pervasive. Instead of looking inside, hey, wait a minute, what in my behavior, what in my head is really causing me to do this or to not be able to do it?
Right.
And because we're so distracted, these lovely things, it's like all of our thoughts are fragmented now. I mean, I work with leaders also on just being present, being present in the conversation with another leader. Because normally what happens is while someone else is talking, we're mentally processing 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 things, right? And then we come away, we first of all don't give our best to that conversation because we really don't have any idea what they're saying. And if we are listening, we're usually thinking up our response instead of really listening and then diving in with more questions for them, to really help them go inward. Right?
It says you're actively listening. Like that is a sign of presence.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. When instead of providing the answer for someone as in a leadership role, we instead don't give them the answer. We ask them questions to help them find the best answer. That's really when we're being fully present and when we make the best impact with people on our team.
But Karen, we have generations growing up now. So you mentioned the smartphone. Younger generations have, all they know is technology and instant gratification. So I don't know if this is going to be hard to answer or not, or if you can, but how is this going to impact them? Is it going to be harder for them to be more present? And will they be faced with these beliefs that stop their success just by the nature of the way that they grew up, because they can't be present and because they fall into old patterns? What would you say to that?
Oh, that's a great question. I love this question. So yes, younger generations, they do experience the same thing, although they experience it a little bit different. And what I found is that they immediately switch into the how I'm going to do something. How are we going to deploy that? Right? I call it the three-letter killer word because they can't even stop themselves. That's their biggest behavioral pattern. And it really gets in their way because they don't take just another second, right? Because they have grown up with the immediacy of the internet and finding answers. You know, they can immediately Google a YouTube video and find out how to do something. But it stops them from exercising original thinking, from really harnessing the power of their unconscious mind and being able to come up with these incredible solutions that you or I would never think of. That's really their gift. That's really their power. So when we work with those folks, we immediately talk about that pattern. And it's very easy to dive into that because it's everywhere, right? It's their number one pattern. And then I stop them every time they start talking about whatever the topic is or whatever they're looking to do, their goal, and they immediately switch into the how. Mm-hmm. I say, wait, hold
on. Bad word.
We got into the how again. Stop. Let's step back. And then, we actually work through the concept first and, just giving them giving them confirmation that, hey, it's okay. We'll get to the how. We'll figure that out. But by, you know, slowing down a tiny bit right now, it's going to make the how all so much better.
So are you, you're so tuned in. There's no doubt about it. How do you, do you limit technology? How are you feeling about technology and your ability to become distracted at times? Because in order for you to teach others and clearly elevate their performance, I'm thinking to myself, you have a handle on this social media or whatever your technology of passion is.
Yes. So during my journey to the Ironman, and I think this is one of the wonderful takeaways from it, I learned to manage my behavior as it relates to these distractions, to social media, to news, anything that is going to come at me every day, I manage it. So email. I mean, this is the first thing that we work on with folks in the C-suite. I mean, they've gotten themselves into this place in their schedule where they literally do not have enough time, or they feel like they don't. They're burnt out. They're just kind of running roughshod as quickly as they can. And they're not allowing their mind to really rest and rejuvenate so that it can do its best thinking. I mean, it's just like if you're working out, if you're constantly working out 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, your body's just going to break down. It's the same thing with your mind, only we don't realize that. We think, oh, it's two different things, you know, because this stuff is accessible, you know, and because I can do it, because I can be connected all the time, I should be. No, that's when we absolutely do our worst thinking. That's when we're completely compromised. So it is a matter of relearning, or even for some folks, like the other generations you talked about, they've never learned that skill, that way of managing the 2 billion bits of information that come at us every single day. Yeah. I have hard stop times. I also keep my phone on silent all the time because
no notifications,
Right? No. And then a couple times a day, my choice, I will actually go and then check everything. You know, I'll check email, I'll check social, whatever I need to, just for what I'm doing. But it's all of those operating systems are not running in the background, because it leads to scatterbrain, right? And then you can't focus on one thing. It also takes you 4 times longer to do anything because you're not fully focused on that one thing. You're trying to multitask, or you've got fragmented thinking. I think there's a statistic out there that it costs us 4.7 seconds when we're distracted to get our thought back on track. Well, if you just write down every time during a minute that you are distracted, and then add up roughly those 5 seconds, well, that's why we think we don't have any time.
Right.
We're distracted all the time.
In distraction.
Yeah.
Do you recommend a morning routine? Is there something that you do that sort of sets your pace for the day? Is there anything that you can share there so that you have certain times, but you feel good going into your day?
Absolutely. First of all, I get enough sleep. So I am the grandma among us. I'm only 51, but I literally go to bed at 7:30. I turn off my cell phone, like literally turn off. I'm not going to text. I'm not going to see emails, nothing. I turn it off at about 5:30. I eat dinner early so that I can go to bed, you know, at 7:30.
I love this.
Yeah. Hey.
I might be a woman.
But it works, right? Yeah. Because that's the other thing. Because we're so distracted and we pay attention to these devices all the time and they're blue lights, then that's causing, it's causing our circadian rhythms to be off. And then we can't go to sleep, or we can't sleep, you know, for a long continuous period of time. I need like 9-10 hours. So I go to bed early so that I can wake up early. Then I do my workout. in the morning, which feeds my soul and my head and my body. I also have quiet time where I will read or I will journal. Sometimes I, like right now, I'm doing a inner development course called Immortal Diamond. So I'll do a piece of that. It's whatever I'm feeling, you know, in the moment, and I'll spend at least 30 to 45 minutes doing that.
I love your routine. I mean, I am a firm believer. So I'm shut off all technology by 9 o'clock, and I need at least an hour and a half to unwind. And whether that's, it could be just a little TV, could be reading, but that I need my 6 to 7 hours of sleep. Mm-hmm. And then I do enjoy the same thing. It's like the exercise in the morning and the reading. There's really something to be said about and setting your intentions too. Like once you do that, you feel, you know, you're going to have a good day. So thank you for
Absolutely.
Sharing that. That's
Absolutely.
Amazing. And Karen, you are not going to believe this, but we're already up to the advice question. We're rounding out the
Flown
show.
By.
It flew by. So if you would share for all of those listeners and people who are watching out there, just a little bit of advice about how they too can achieve their lifelong dreams.
Let me boil it down. I would say, first of all, pay attention to and put front and center whatever your lifelong dream is. It is the key to everything you're looking for. Everything. And then I would say, do whatever it takes to step into it and work on it and achieve it. If it's conquering limiting beliefs or rearranging your schedule or you know, even doing something brand new, like, you know, a recreational runner wanting to perform in the biggest race on the planet, do it. You know, here's the other thing about our unconscious mind. It also has the ability to carry out anything we can think up.
It's unbelievable.
Literally, barring nothing. And there's examples of this all over the world. I mean, think of icons of success, Elon Musk, Richard Branson, Warren Buffett, right? They literally changed the world by thinking of ways to achieve the impossible. And they have the same brains we do. Yeah. So tap into that our unconscious mind also gives us the ability to do anything we can think of.
That's so inspiring. I feel very empowered after
right.
speaking with you. All right, last question, super easy. Where can people find out more about you, your book, your work?
Well, it's in one great, easy place for everyone. So as Deirdre mentioned at the beginning, the name of my company is Velocity Leadership Consulting. So just put a .com behind that and then a /, and greater, the word greater, meaning greater success or greater impact. And that'll take you to everything, how to contact me, get the book, all of the other, you know, conquering limiting beliefs, those techniques, those steps that we offer.
Awesome. And we'll make sure that gets into the show notes as well, so everybody can find you easily. And I hope they do, because Karen, you are such an inspiration. And I can't thank you enough for sharing your journey, for helping all of us to sort of think more about that purpose. And we can power up our own voices together.
Absolutely. And you know what? We can do it together. We can help each other do it together.
That's awesome. That's the goal. So thank you. Thank you for taking the time to be on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And thank you, all of you listeners and viewers out there, for tuning into Women Worldwide. We appreciate you, and keep the feedback coming. So you are tweeting us on Twitter. You're letting us know how you feel. You're on Facebook. You can rate us on iTunes. You can subscribe on YouTube. There's so many ways to share, and we just appreciate how you're helping us grow our network. So friends, until our next episode, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.